Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, The Journey of the Milk Ocean, text number 12. No purports, so just read the translation. The great sages perform the bathing ceremony of the goddess of fortune as directed in the authorized scriptures. The Gandharvas chanted all auspicious Vedic mantras, and the professional women dancers very nicely danced and sang authorized songs prescribed in the Vedas. Text 13, the clouds in personified form beat various types of drums known as mridangas, panavas, murajas, and anakas. They also blew conch shells and bugles known as gomukas and played flutes and stringed instruments. The combined sound of these instruments was tumultuous. Thereafter, the great elephants from all the directions, carried by water, big water jugs full of Ganges water, bathed the goddess of fortune to the accompaniment of Vedic mantras, chanted by learned brahmanas. While thus being bathed, the goddess of fortune maintained her original style with a lotus flower in her hand, and she appeared very beautiful. The goddess of fortune is the most chaste, but she does not know anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is described in this verse as Shriyam, which means that she has six opulences: wealth, strength, influence, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These opulences are received from the goddess of fortune. Lakshmi is addressed here as Devi, the goddess, because in Vaikuntha, she supplies all opulences to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, who in this way enjoy natural life in the Vaikuntha planets. The Supreme Personality of God is pleased with his consort, the goddess of fortune, carries a lotus in her hand. Mother Lakshmi is described in this verse as Sati, the supremely chaste, because she never diverts her attention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to anyone else. We'll read text 15. Samudra Pita Koshaya. Vasasi Samupaharat. Varuna Srajam Vaijayantim. Maduna Mata Satpadam. Samudra, the ocean, Pita Kaushaya, yellow silk, Vasasi, both the upper and lower portions of a garment, Samudpaharat, prescribed, Varuna, predominating deity of the water. Shrajam, garland. Vaijayantim, the most decorated and the biggest. Maduna, with honey. Mata, drunken. Shatpadam, bumblebees, which have six legs. How many do they usually have? Does anyone know? They usually have eight.
But the insect kingdom is supposed to have eight legs. So I don't know. But all the bumblebees are like that.
It's a controversy. Let's fight it out in the internet. Anyhow, six, eight, ten. They're all used in Krishna service. Translation of Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. The ocean, which is the source of all valuable jewels, supply the upper and lower portions of a yellow silken garment. The predominating deity of the water, Varuna, presented flower garlands surrounded by six-legged bumblebees, drunken with honey. So if you're going to get drunk, Here's an authorized way of getting drunk. Drink honey. Like Varuni especially. Offer it first to Balaram, then drink. Purport. When bathing the deity in the Abhishek ceremony with various liquids, such as milk, honey, yogurt, ghee, cow dung, and cow urine, it is customary to supply yellow garments. In this way, the Abhishek ceremony for the goddess of fortune was performed according to the regular Vedic principles. Text 16. Vishvakarma, one of the Prajapatis, supplied varieties of decorated ornaments. The goddess of fortune, Saraswati, supplied a necklace. The goddess of learning, Saraswati, supplied a necklace. Lord Brahma supplied a lotus flower. And the inhabitants of Nagaloka supplied earrings. Well, I guess if we were there, we could have at least supplied a lotus flower like Lord Brahma did. Maybe it was a special lotus flower. Expansion of his planet. Or something like that. Text 17. Thereafter, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, having been properly celebrated with an auspicious ritualistic ceremony, began moving about, holding in her hand a garland of lotus flowers, which were surrounded by humming bumblebees, smiling with shyness, her cheeks decorated by her earrings, she looked extremely beautiful. Purport, the goddess of fortune, Mother Lakshmi, accepted the ocean milk as her father, but she perpetually rests on the bosom of Narayan. She offers benedictions even to Lord Brahma and other living entities in the material world, yet she is transcendental to all material qualities. Although she appeared to have been born of the ocean of milk, she immediately resorted to her eternal place on the bosom of Narayan. No place like home, especially when it happens to be the chest of Lord Narayan. Her two breasts, which were symmetrical and nicely situated, were covered with sandalwood pulp and kumkum powder, and her waist was very thin. As she walked here and there, her ankles, bells jingled softly, she appeared like a creeper of gold. While walking among the Gandharvas, Yakshas, Asuras, Siddhas, Charanas, and denizens of heaven, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, was scrutinizingly examining them, but she could not find anyone naturally endowed with all good qualities. None of them was devoid of faults, and therefore she could not take shelter of any of them. Purport, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, having been generated from the ocean of milk, was the daughter of the ocean. Thus she was allowed to select her own husband in a Swayamvara ceremony. She examined every one of the candidates, but she could not find anyone suitably qualified to be her shelter. In other words, Narayan, the natural husband of Lakshmi, cannot be superseded by anyone in this material world. Text 20. The goddess of fortune examining the assembly thought in this way. Someone has undergone great austerity, has not yet conquered anger. Someone possesses knowledge, but has not conquered material desires. Someone has a very great personality, but he cannot conquer lusty desires. Even a great personality depends on something else. How then can he be the supreme controller? Purport, here is an attempt to find the supreme controller or Ishvara. Everyone may be accepted as an Ishvara or controller, but still such controllers are controlled by others. For example, one may have undergone severe austerities, but still be under the control of anger. by a scrutinizing the analysis, we find that everyone is controlled by something else. No one therefore can be the true controller but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. This is supported by the Shastras. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Supreme Controller is Krishna. Krishna is never controlled by anyone. He is the control of everyone, Sarva Karana Karana. Although a very simple point that Krishna is Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana, that Krishna is the cause of everything. Therefore, one who knows that, he becomes Shantim. He becomes peaceful, because Krishna is all good, and therefore whatever Krishna does is also good. And if we thought Krishna was not so good, then it wouldn't be very, one could not be peaceful. If someone who's not good is in charge, especially not good for us, we'd be quite disturbed. Or if someone who's absolutely good wasn't completely in charge, it would also be fearful. One would be fearful. But since Krishna is both, he's absolutely in charge of everything, and at the same time, he's all good. Therefore, there's no need to be in anxiety about anything, because everything is controlled by Krishna. Now, the only thing to be in anxiety about is what role we're playing personally. Everything may be good, but we may be bad. If we dovetail our activities, our body, mind, and words, niha yasya harerdashe, karmana manasagira, nikilasya vivapsavsu, jiva muktas uchate. That one who utilizes his body, mind, and words completely in Krishna's service, he's not known to be liberated even in this world. So if we're dovetailed with the all good, then we become good. And if we don't dovetail ourselves with the all good, then he may, whatever is happening may be good, but not necessarily we may be good. And if we're bad, then we suffer. And if we're actually dovetailed with Krishna, with the all good, then everything is good for us. At least we come in contact with the all good, and then our existence becomes all good. And when we're not in contact with the all good, then our existence is bad to different degrees. Because people don't know that, Nitevidu Swarthakatim, He Vishnu, they don't know that the actual aim is to contact Krishna, and therefore, Dharashaya Bahir Artamanina. And therefore, they take shelter of things which are actually have no real substantial value. They're not permanent. Andaya tandira pigiyamanaste pisha tantram urudami vara. Because they're blind, and they're also, their leaders are also blind. So we may think this person's in control, or there may be some group that we don't know about that's control, that's causing our problems. But actually, Krishna is controlling everything. So if you have to blame people, someone for your problems, then better to blame Krishna. But we should know that it's all for everyone's good. Just like when one is in the hospital, he's told to fast. So that fasting is part of their purification. So, similarly, one may have to go through some painful operation, but the operation is ultimately meant for their health. Similarly, this material world by its nature is very unpleasant. Sometimes it's even more unpleasant than usual. And we call that problems. It's always a problem. Everything's a problem. We can't even sit up straight. Even sitting up straight is a problem. We don't even know how to breathe. We don't even have to get air properly. Even getting air every day is a problem. That's why we yawn all the time. Because we don't get enough air. Or maybe we're sleepy too. Or maybe the lecture is boring. It helps us rest a little bit more. In any case, the material world is a problem. Adiatmaka, adibhadaka, adidaivaka, miseries are afflicting us. But we, generally speaking, we're not so much conscious of even all the pains and sufferings we're going through. And what to speak of the major problems, namely birth, death, old age, and disease, we take those things quite lightly. Oh, so what? I'm growing old. I'm young. I'm healthy. I'll never become really diseased or unhealthy. I'm special. I'm a nice person. Nice people don't grow old and become diseased. And even though there's some rumors that sometimes people die, but they die, but not in Slovenia. It's a special place. People are small but beautiful here. It's a small but beautiful country. And things like death, we don't have to worry about. But these things, these miseries, are actually for our benefit, so we don't stay here. We're thinking, this is a nice place. And we just hope it doesn't get any, it stays nice. We're accustomed to a certain environment, and we just hope that it stays nice. We don't realize that it's not nice compared to our actual place where we're supposed to be. It's not our natural abode. Therefore, Krishna is trying to kick us out of this abode, back to the spiritual world, and we're complaining. Why are you doing this? Like a worm is in stool, and he's enjoying. There's plenty of food. His house is warm. Doesn't have to pay for anything. Whole family's there. Free education. Everything's free. So you try to take the worm out of the stool, he'll complain. What are you doing? Don't you realize I'm enjoying? Why are you so cruel? Leave me alone. Find another worm to harass. Or that famous story with Indra, he was cursed to become a pig. I guess it was his spiritual master, Brihaspati. So he became a pig on this planet. And he was living in a pigsty. And a pig family with a beautiful pig wife. And he was enjoying it. Everything was going his way. But one day Brahma came and he said, "My dear Indra, I know you're a pig, but we need some help in the administrative work in the heavenly planets. We're requesting you come back. Your curse is over." Indra said, "No way. This is life. Look at my pigsty. I get unlimited food and it's always fresh. My wife, look at her tail. I mean, what could be more exciting? And my kids, you know, look at that one. He eats twice as much as I do. He's really chip off the old pigsty." So Brahma said, no, you got to come back. No way. Find another guy to run the heavenly planets. This is really the life. So Brahma decided to take his sword, cut off the head of the pig's wife. Indra's wife was a pig. The little piglets got killed also. And Indra was next. So Indra said, "Well, on second thought, maybe I'll take a little vacation to the heavenly planets, see what it's like." So even the lowest place in this material world where one is in the lowest body, but one is still thinking one is enjoying. What to speak of our poor selves. We're afraid of death. Even we're going back to the spiritual world, we don't want to go. We just want to be here a little bit longer, fulfill our plans. But the plans never end. And therefore we can stay here. We've been here since time immemorial. And we can stay here from time immemorial for now, trying to fulfill our plans. But this whole idea is, one should try to understand that the real goddess of fortune is not residing here in the material world. The real goddess of fortune is in the spiritual world. Of course, what we think is fortune in this world, this plastic and this metal in the form of cars and buildings, whatever else, what kind of taste can actually one get from it? It's just some mental idea that I'm the controller here. You can't lick your car. Enjoy your car. Unless it's a gingerbread car. Sometimes children make, they make for children cars made of gingerbread. Then you can lick the car. You can even eat it. Or made out of jelly beans. Because you can only eat so many jelly beans before you get sick. But then it may have some taste. But all this so-called opulence, including the diamonds, maybe diamonds have some medicinal value or whatever. But basically speaking, it's just an idea that we're controlling, we're enjoying. But ultimately, everyone is controlled by the modes of material nature, and there's very little at all real substantial enjoyment. And even when it's so-called enjoying, one is always fearful that the enjoyment is going to come to an end soon. The goddess of fortune may give you a beautiful ice cream cone by her mercy. Just as flavors you like, strawberry and carob, because she knows we don't eat chocolate. So one may think one's enjoying, but every lick when it's in anxiety is disappearing. The stomach's getting filled up, so capacity for enjoyment is diminishing, and what we're enjoying is disappearing. So instead of being happy with every lick, one is fearful. Soon my enjoyment will come to an end, and what's next? Now next I have to have a stomachache for 2 days. So real enjoyment is eternal. Tidpo divyam putraka yena shudya tasmai pramasokim tunantam. That such happiness never doesn't have a beginning and an end. Yehi samsparshya bhoga dukha yone evate adyantavanta kontiya nateshu ramate buddha. An intelligent person doesn't take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the senses, with their objects. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and end, and so the wise doesn't delight in them. So what's the solution? We have so many desires, we're being pushed in so many different ways, and therefore Goddess Lakshmi will never choose us as a husband, because we have so many faults. Even although everyone is looking for the Goddess of Lakshmi Devi to become the wife, but she's not going to choose anyone who's not perfect. So what's the solution? Kama krodha saknoti vai yaksho dum prakshariri vimokshara kama krodha bhavan vegam suyukta saksukinara. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of desire and anger, he's a yogi and he's happy in this world. So happy, how to become happy? Tolerate our mental concoctions, the pushings of our senses. Tolerate and fix the mind upon Krishna. Like the goddess of Lakshmi Devi is doing here. She doesn't like anyone who's not aware of reality. She's looking for the supreme reality, Krishna, and therefore she's rejecting even great demigods and sages because they're still attached in the material world in some way, looking for Narayan because he's above the material energy. So we'll find out what happens. Maybe she gets him, maybe she doesn't, but we can take bets afterwards. Whatever odds you want. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Tune in tomorrow and find out what happens with Mother Lakshmi Devi.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice explanation. I wanted to just mention the comments from the acharyas to this verse, today's verse, because they're quite funny, because it says she found somebody austere but not able to conquer one's anger. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says this is like Durvasa. He is austere but cannot control. So he gives the names to each of these categories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he says if somebody is knowledgeable but cannot control all the material desires, so Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says like Brihaspati here or some others, he is knowledgeable, but we know some stories were there in Canto 9. And someone is a very great personality, but cannot conquer lusty desires like Brahma or Soma.
Soma, who's Soma?
The moon god.
Oh, the moon god.
He has both Brihaspati and Soma seem to me. And one who has a lot of power but still depends on others, this is like Indra here. So she in this verse she speaks without mentioning the names, but the acharyas bring up the names.
She's being polite. Good, thank you. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. As you were speaking about this pastime of Indra, I was reminded of Param Drishtva Nivartante, that one can only give up the lower taste if one gets a higher taste. So, again, the point is that people need to know that there is something higher than eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And until that knowledge comes, we are going to be like Indra the pig.
That's right. Well, modern civilization is simply meant to constructing a bigger and better pigsty. Because they don't know. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Pravitim cha navritim cha jana navidor asara dasocham napichacharo nasatyam tesha vidyate. They don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. Neither cleanliness, nor truthfulness, nor proper behavior is found in them. So Prabhupada used to say that also to the householders sometimes, the devotees. He asked them, what are you doing, when he sometimes saw householders in the Hare Krishna movement. They said, well, I'm just taking care of my family. So Prabhupada would say, he told that to Srinathji. So he said, what's the difference between you and a pig? You're eating, sleeping, mating, defending. He's also eating, sleeping, mating. What are you doing for Krishna? What are you doing for your spiritual life? Otherwise, we're just on the same level as is. Swavidra, Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kastan kaman arhate vid bhujam ye. That if we're not performing divine austerity, as Maharaj Rishabhdev told his son, then we're living like hogs and dogs.
Thank you.
Kuala, yes, one more question.
Hare Krishna, thank you for inspiring lecture. I also have a question about the story of Indra. So you mentioned that living entity is satisfied no matter how abominable its condition is when it is conditioned. And I was wanted to ask what is the difference between this false satisfaction and between being always satisfied in devotional service? Because I heard that we should always be satisfied. So how can we separate between these two satisfactions?
One is temporary, the other is eternal. One is a drop, the other one is an ocean. So we have to practice devotional service, and then these things will be clear. Otherwise, if we're only seeing the outside of the honey bottle, its description, we won't be able to understand what the taste is like. We have to be willing to open the jar and go into the bottle, and then we can taste the honey. Then we can understand the difference between licking the bottle and tasting the honey. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Based on this verse, if even some great demigods or great yogis are not able to conquer their anger or lust desires, then how much hope do we have to accomplish this?
Well, we practice devotional service. That's our hope. Not our great ability to conquer any of these things. That we're relying upon Krishna's mercy, that gradually we become purified from these things. Now we're trying to conquer them. What is that? Yadpada pada pankaja palasa vilasya bhaktya kamashayam grahitam ugrakirtanti shanta Tavanariktamati yogyata yopi ruda shutoganas tamarunam bhaja vasudevam. Just worship Vasudeva Krishna, because even if one does that, then the heart knot of material attachment can be slashed. On the other hand, even the great sages and yogis, they become overwhelmed by material desires and become victims to the material energy. So we're taking shelter of Krishna, and the more we feel hopeless or helpless, then the more Krishna will help us. So we think we're strong and powerful, we can conquer these things, then we'll become victims. And if we think our only hope is Krishna and his representatives, then Krishna will protect us. Therefore, humility is a great asset in devotional service.
I just wonder, either demigods practice devotional service or...
Yeah, they're sakama bhaktas, which means just like in the Varnashram system, everyone practices devotional service, but for some material benefit. So they worship Krishna, but they want something. They want to maintain their position in the heavenly planets, at least. But they're devotees, and therefore, because they're devotees, therefore their standard of living is thousands of times greater than ours, because their actual devotion is much greater than ours too. So we shouldn't disrespect the demigods that they're just materialists. They're also devotees, but there's some mixture of material desires there too. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.